From Southwest Florida Public Radio, this is Gulf Coast Live. It's been about 5 years since the website MySpace brought the notion of online social networking into the public consciousness. At first, sites like MySpace and then later Facebook were domains of the younger generation, mostly used by high school and college students. And almost immediately, they started getting a bad rap, with news stories about online predators and bullies using them for illegitimate reasons. Well, social networking has grown up, and apparently so have its users. According to Facebook, more than half of its now 120 million plus members are out of college, and its fastest growing demographic is people over 25. On today's show, we're going to explore online social networking and Facebook in particular. Are you on Facebook? If so, why? Or maybe you think it and sites like it are just a waste of time. Either way, we want to hear your stories today. First, this news update. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Social networking sites like MySpace and Facebook have been right in the middle of the mainstream for several years now. That's if you're a college or high school student, or often even younger. But that's changing. Many older people are flocking to, maybe being sucked into, sites like Facebook. On today's show, we're going to learn more about online social networking in general, and we want to hear from you. Maybe you're new to Facebook or MySpace or one of the other sites, even though you're not a college student or a high school student. You may even consider yourself to be all grown up. If so, we want to hear from you in particular today. Joining me today is Nicole Ellison. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Telecommunications, Information Studies, and Media at Michigan State University. She's a communication scholar who studies the social impacts of new media like online dating and social networking sites like Facebook. Nicole, thanks very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
And to join our conversation, give us a call now. The number is 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Or you can send us email to live@wgcu.org. Are you a member of Facebook or any other online social networking communities? Why? What are they good for? Or if not, why not? The number again, 877-428-8255. Nicole, tell us a bit about yourself and your research and how it intertwines with social networking and places like MySpace.
Sure. Well, I'm 40 years old. I use Facebook every day, and I have really felt that it allows me to keep in touch with people that I wouldn't ordinarily track in my life. And the research that I've done with my colleagues here at Michigan State University, which focuses on use of Facebook by undergraduates, has shown that there actually are benefits to Facebook use. And the kind of theoretical lens that we use is social capital, which is basically a way of describing the benefits that you get from your social circle. So it may be in the form of information, it may be social support, it may be exposure to different kinds of perspectives. And essentially, our research shows that students who use Facebook more intensively tend to have higher levels of social capital.
And social capital would be a concept that would apply to real life, quote-unquote, as well, not just necessarily an online experience.
Oh, definitely. And in fact, the way that we worded our questions were actually, we didn't differentiate between online and offline networks.
Gotcha. And are you a member of any other social networking sites besides Facebook, or is that your only one?
That's the one I tend to gravitate towards. I also use Twitter, and I think there's features that are similar. So Twitter is kind of like the Facebook status message.
Twitter's like Facebook meets text messaging, kind of, right?
Kind of. It's talked about as microblogging, so it's very, very short snippets. I like it because I control my Twitter group more, so I feel like I can kind of talk about things that I might not want my students, for instance, to see me talking about. So with Facebook, I have a very, very large network. I tend to, if I've met someone or if I have some kind of offline connection with them, I tend to approve them as a friend, whereas Twitter I'm much more careful about.
So it's a bit of a little demarcation there. You've got your sort of your inner circle and then your broader circle.
To some extent, although obviously a lot of the people that I connect with on Facebook are also people that I consider close friends.
Well, let's talk for a second. There's probably lots of people out there that have never been to Facebook, have never used a social network site in general. Just describe, in real simple terms what it is. I guess, well, I'll start. I'm looking at my Facebook page here, mm-hmm. and it has what's called the news feed on the left side, and it's little bullet points and pictures and updates of all the people who I have chosen to be quote-unquote friends with. And it gives a sort of status update, I guess you can say, of what they're doing with links to their site or their pictures or their link that they posted if it's a news story or something like that. Can you kind of just go into the mechanics of being a Facebook user a bit?
Sure. Well, the first thing, and I think the kind of one of the most important components, is the profile. So this is where you choose what photos of yourself you want to include. You have the opportunity to include information about different musical interests, to join different groups, to state your political affiliation. There's a whole kind of host of fields that you can populate with information about yourself. And I've seen widely ranging, some people who have every field filled out with all kinds of intimate detail, more than you would ever want to know. Other people who just list, very, very simple, simple bits of information and keep it pretty low key.
And that's at the user's discretion. They can add as much
exactly.
or as little as they want. They can add a picture if they want. It's up to the person.
Exactly. So it's similar in some sense to maybe an online dating profile that you might complete or a personal web page. This is where you are allowed to kind of express yourself. And obviously there are privacy settings that control who sees that profile. And you can really get in there and tweak the settings so that, certain kinds of people can see some fields but not others. So that's one of the most important components. Then secondly, you have the ability to create this network of friends. Different social network sites use different terms. So in LinkedIn, for instance, which is more of a professional social network site, they call them contacts. But Facebook, they're considered friends, and, this can be kind of there's no real clear-cut definition of what a friend is. And this is kind of varies by individual. So for some people, these really can be just their close friends. For others, they basically will kind of just accept a friendship request from anyone. So there's really a broad range of kind of what is considered a friend, but people are aware of that.
Now, go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, and I was just going to say that then what this allows you to do is then you can, access the information in your friends' profiles. So a lot of times students, this is their contact. This is their address book. They don't, if they need someone's room number or instant message, screen name or cell phone number, they just go to Facebook. So there's that aspect of it, and just in terms of kind of information. And then, as you mentioned, the news feed, which essentially allows people to easily see whenever their friends have made changes to their profile. So it could be that they've broken up with someone. It could be that they've added a musical interest. It could be the status update, which is just a little field saying your name is, and then you can fill it in with whatever you want. You're in a class. You're thinking about this. You want advice about this. So this is just basically your a field that's updated a lot more often than the other kind of personal information fields.
I found that update that Mike is, like right now, I just changed my Mike is from Mike is getting over a wicked cold to Mike is hosting a radio show on Facebook. I find that to be, in my reading for the show, I came across this concept, somebody called it ambient awareness, where you may only spend 30 seconds looking at your Facebook site in a day, but you kind of glean a bit of information about all of your friends, what's going on in their life, whether they've just come back from a trip, what their kids are up to in my case, because, I'm a bit older than what has typically been the Facebook user. And it's a really interesting sense of connectivity that doesn't take a whole lot of effort. I think that seems to be the Facebook juju, if you will, is the it's easy to stay in touch without really having to try.
Yes. Yeah. No. Exactly. I think it's the term I use is lightweight. So it's a very kind of lightweight way to interact with people. It's you're not and you're not having to go into your email and kind of send out a message. This is just something that people can access if they want. And then, of course, you can get a read on all of your friends very, very easily just by skimming that one page. So I think that that's one of the features that really people really see the benefit of and like to use.
I'm going to take a call now from Lauren in Fort Myers. If you'd like to add a thought to our conversation, call 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Good evening, afternoon, excuse me. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Great.
Good. Well, I am on MySpace and Facebook, and I actually met my husband on MySpace. I think that it's actually just a great way to either keep in touch or meet new people. And I just got my mom and dad to join it. So I really love the social networking programs, as you're calling them. I think they're a great way to keep in touch with people.
How have your parents found the experience? Are they engaging in it in some way, or are they just sort of playing along with your wishes?
Well, my mom, from somebody who would have to type out a sentence one finger at a time to now having a Palm Trio phone and going on the computer through her phone and being on Facebook, I mean, she's really just taken it all in, and she has family all across the nation, so it's also a great way to keep in touch with the rest of her family. But she's just enjoying it, and my dad's enjoying it the same way.
And how long have you been on Facebook or MySpace, Lauren?
Facebook, I just recently joined earlier this year, and then MySpace, I've actually been on it for about 3 years now, a little more than 3 years. I got on it when it was fairly fresh and not so many people were on it. And I kind of like Facebook in that sense because I feel that it is a more intimate setting, if you would, you know, with your status updates and everything else like that, and room numbers like you were talking about earlier. But I like both of them. They both have a lot to offer, so it's really neat.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call, Lauren.
Yeah, I could comment briefly on that. So she mentioned meeting her husband, and while the research that we've done on Facebook shows that the majority of people are kind of using Facebook to articulate their existing network, so these are people that they already have some kind of offline connection with, as opposed to meeting strangers, that does happen on and on all these sites. And the, you know, one of the kind of features that we haven't really talked about is the ways that they allow you to find people with shared interests. So, for instance, you can join a group, you know, vegetarians at MSU, and quickly see a list of the other members of that group, and so connect with people who have shared interests. And this could be a whole, you know, you can imagine that there's just a whole range of kind of political activism that can happen on these sites, or shared music interests. MySpace does a lot in terms of bands promoting themselves, so people with shared musical interests can you know, introduce one another to new bands. So there's a whole kind of another layer of benefits that, when you use these sites to try to meet people that you might not meet otherwise.
One of the things she also mentioned in terms of her mom was that with people everywhere, how much do you think the transience of our society sort of feeds into this, where we have friends who come in, they leave, or friends that were from like back in the day, high school, that moved away, and this sort of transcends geography, obviously, and it seems like maybe that's something as a culture we kind of want, because we have become so transient that we tend not to have long-term connections?
Well, I don't know that we don't tend to have long-term connections. We don't tend to stay in the same place.
Right.
That makes those connections kind of easier to maintain.
Well, that's the thing. So, I mean, you know, a lot of the people who I know through Facebook were people who I was able to get in touch with, but I didn't. But somehow with Facebook, back to the idea of it being easy or lightweight or whatever you called it, it sort of bridges that gap. You know, I could have picked up the phone. I could have sent an email. I could have written a letter. But for some reason, I didn't. But now with Facebook, all of those things seem tied into one in such an easy way that it becomes a beneficial and really helpful kind of thing to build community.
I think that's a great way of putting it. And a lot of the work that we've done with undergraduates, what we find is that they, you know, they really use the site to keep in touch with high school friends. And so now we're, as we're seeing kind of older populations gravitate towards the site, that happens as well. I mean, I have a whole slew now of people that I've haven't physically seen in 20 years, but I kind of have a sense of what's going on in their life. And yes, you know, I think the, you know, one issue is, would I take the time to write an email or call this person? Maybe not, but the point is that they are there, and I can draw on them if I'm, you know, going to be in this town where they're now living, and I want to get a restaurant recommendation, or if I am applying for a job at the company that they're working at. And so that's kind of this notion of bridging social capital, is these are people who are weak ties, who we're not intimately connected with, but they can provide us with useful information or diverse perspectives. And so Facebook and other social network sites makes it easier for us to maintain these kind of lightweight connections, and then if we need to, we can connect with them more intimately, but we don't have to.
I'm joined today by Professor Nicole Ellison from Michigan State University. We're talking about the increased use of social networking sites like Facebook by an older demographic than in years past. Are you a member of an online social network? If so, give us a call, 1-877-GCU-TALK, or send email to live@wgcu.org. Let's take another call from Rob in Lehigh. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm 20 years old, and so I'm prime demographic for Facebook. But, you know, I think it's pointless. It lowers human contact with friends. I don't like Facebook or MySpace or any of those.
Have you tried them and just decided not to, or you just have a gut instinct that they're not beneficial?
No, I got a MySpace account back in 2003 or 2004 when it was just starting to catch on. And at first I thought, you know, the same as everyone else, this is kind of cool. It's an easy way to keep in touch with friends. But, you know, then it turned out that I saw that my friends weren't calling each other anymore. They're just leaving posts on their MySpace account. And it's really lowering contact, I think.
What do you think of that idea of diminishing the notion of contact, or maybe diluting it in some way?
Well, I guess it depends on whether you're going to privilege face-to-face communication over other forms of mediated communication. I recognize that, you know, there's nothing that can replace kind of being there and sharing time and space with someone. But at the same time, I don't tend to think that face-to-face communication is kind of the only authentic way to connect with other people. So that may, you know, that's kind of, I guess, a fundamental, almost philosophical stance that really would affect how you look at these sites. But I can say that you know, I've definitely spoken with students who echo those sentiments, who feel that who felt that it was becoming a problem in terms of their friends using this as a substitute for face-to-face connections. But I've also spoken with many more students who talk about the ways that they actually use these online sites to kind of organize face-to-face meetings or to plan a getting together for a study group or to send out an invitation to a face-to-face party. So I think there's this whole the whole component of kind of organizing that can happen where you're actually using the site to facilitate face-to-face get-togethers. But I also think that that is, you know, somewhat of a kind of romantic notion that we all have the kind of the time and the wherewithal to only connect in face-to-face settings. You know, I have people who I would love to spend more time with, but they're 3,000 miles away. And so for me, being able to at least kind of see a Facebook message and to kind of think about them throughout my day is better than nothing at all.
Rob, you being 20, do you have lots of friends who are on these kinds of sites that are, you know, asking you why you're not? Is there any peer pressure, in a sense, to get you on them?
Oh, yeah. Nearly all my friends use MySpace or Facebook, and I do have accounts on them. So that issue is really not there because, you know, I already kind of caved into that back when I was first asked. I said, I'll go ahead and sign up for this, see what it's about. And maybe I do miss out on a little bit with my friends planning things, like you said, getting ready for events, but... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like Rob, and Rob, I'm going to move on to the next call, but thanks very much for calling in. Have a great day, okay?
Thanks, you too.
Thanks. It sounds like, Rob, you know, when I first got on Facebook, I immediately recognized sort of a slippery slope toward, you know, there's a lot of things in there that you can do, a lot of little applications, a lot of little quizzes you can take. You can always be trying to send, you know, you can, it can suck you in a really time-consuming way. And it sounds like, as much as anything, Rob's reluctance had to do with a fear of that slippery slope. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think definitely we've, you know, with again, to kind of get back to the population that I've been studying, there's definitely the sense that you can kind of get on Facebook and then to do one little thing, and then 2 hours later you're clicking from, you know, photo album to photo album. So I guess I would see that as the case with lots of other things as well, with picking up a magazine or going to a, you know, online news site. I don't see that as kind of a problem that's unique to this online environment.
I'm joined today by Professor Nicole Ellison from Michigan State University. We're talking about the increased use of social networking sites like Facebook. If you want to join our conversation, call in now. The number's 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Let's take a call from Holly in Sanibel. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I actually am referring back to the young man, the 20-year-old, who's about half my age. I'm a body-mind psychotherapist, and so my training is in somatic psychology, the psychology of the body. And I was heartened by his comment that he wanted more face-to-face and more body-to-body connection. And the professor mentioned that it was maybe a philosophical issue, and that may be the case, but I also think it's a biological issue. And I think that there's so much that goes on that's not about the written word or that goes on between folks being in the same room together. And I was just, although I agree, I use the computer, even though I didn't grow up with one, I use the computer, I have a Facebook account. I still think it's so important, particularly now in today's world, actually get in the same space and visit with each other and commune with each other, because there's so much communication that goes on below the surface. So that's my comment today. I'm going to hang up so I can listen.
All right, Holly, thanks very much. You know, it's interesting, Nicole, because it seems like on some level there's this idea that if you use Facebook, you don't talk to people anymore, and if you talk to people, you don't use Facebook. But obviously, I think I read the average person spends about 20 minutes or a half an hour on Facebook in a given day. And, you know, compared to the amount of time most people watch TV, maybe it's not such a bad thing after all, as long as it doesn't become, you know, you have 1,000 Facebook friends and you don't know anybody.
Correct.
In your hometown.
I mean. Yeah, I think the notion, and I don't mean to suggest that this is what the last caller was doing, but I think there is this kind of false dichotomy that's out there where people see offline and online communication as being incompatible. And I definitely agree with the argument that there are certain things that we can learn from one another and that we can experience through face-to-face communication. I would, you know, never suggest that that's not an important part of being human and connecting with other people. But I also think that because of, you know, the differences in time and space. I mean, obviously, so you and I could be sitting down and having this conversation with you know, with your callers and that would be great, but it's just, you know, simply not possible. And so I really tend to look at, you know, when two things. One is that when we can't connect face to face for various financial or practical or environmental reasons, that these are that we need to substitute with other forms of communication. And also I would make the point that very often these other forms of communication actually support face-to-face communication. So and maybe even make it more comfortable. So for instance, if I have a high school friend who I haven't talked to in 20 years and I run into him or her on the street, if I've been able to kind of see what's going on in their life and that they just got divorced, so don't ask about their husband, that this actually might serve the purpose of easing conversation. I might not kind of look the other way because it would be awkward. So I think there's it's a really kind of complicated formula, and I guess I just would like to kind of point out that I don't think any communication scholars would argue that it's this kind of dichotomy between online and offline. Although, as you pointed out, we only have so many hours in the day, and so obviously, if we're using one medium, it's going to take the place of something else. And whether, so the question really is, are you using Facebook instead of going
Project
to the
Runway?
Bar? Sorry?
Project Runway?
yeah, exactly. Are you using Facebook instead of sitting in front of the television for an hour? Or are you using Facebook instead of going to the coffee shop and hanging out with your friends for an hour? So that's really, I think, the question that we'd want to look at is not are you using Facebook, period, but rather what are you, where is that time coming from?
Well, and it's interesting, too, if you think back, I don't know if the analogy is perfect, but when the telephone was first developed, I wonder if people thought, well, gosh, nobody's going to talk to each other in person anymore because they can talk to each other from down the street. And this is just, this is 1,000 dimensions further than the telephone now that we've connected everybody in the world with pictures and videos and everything. But it's the same kind of notion. Just because you talk to somebody on the phone instead of walking over doesn't necessarily mean in today's world that you're shirking personal connection.
Right, right. Well, and any time a new communication technology is introduced, there's always kind of a set of anxieties that surround how we how we think about it. What is this going to do to us? What are we giving up? So it's completely natural. We've seen it historically, and I think what we'll just have to do is kind of see where this plays out, and it's a choice. Obviously, no one's kind of going to force you to use a social network site, and so I think there's a kind of a wide range of individual decisions in terms of how they want to use these tools, or even if they want to use them.
Let's take one more call before we take a quick break. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Let's talk to Laura in Orlando. Laura, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I wanted to say hi to Mike. I haven't actually heard your voice since
1990.
The early 90s.
This is one of my Facebook friends who I've recently, brought back into the fold because of this wonderful tool. Laura, continue.
Yes, I just wanted to talk about the pedagogical implications of Facebook as well. I teach at a university in Orlando, and what we do is we actually have our students, both the face-to-face as well as the online students, actually create Facebook pages to teach them about marketing and networking and that type of thing. And we do prefer Facebook over MySpace, although, a lot of our recording art students and also show production and touring students, obviously would be using MySpace more for the music. But it's really interesting because the students who had not had any social networking experience prior to really are able to understand the value of actually creating that and using that as a marketing tool. And as well, the online students who actually are not campus-based, especially in my degree program where we've got people as far away as Hawaii, they're able to actually kind of get to know their colleagues and their cohort a little bit better in that they're able to, when they do group projects, they'll be able to see interests and also get a little bit more of a personable approach to them, whereas, you may just see a gruff posting on a discussion board somewhere where you, automatically will have an idea about how you think that person's personality is, and whereas they might just be having a bad day in regards to the interaction that you've had with them. So we really use this at our university for on many different levels, but I just wanted to call in and talk more about the pedagogical implications.
I think that's a great point. It's actually one of my areas of interest that I'm starting to look into. I think what you're talking about is this kind of concept of digital literacy, right? And
yes.
and encouraging students to play with these tools, because these tools are going to be crucial, I think, as they go out and become successful citizens and professionals. And so, depending on the context, maybe it's making a site for your band on MySpace, maybe it's making a page in LinkedIn to be able to connect with other professionals and find out about job opportunities. But there's a whole kind of range of benefits kind of above and beyond just the social that I'm really happy to hear that you're encouraging students to engage with. And one of the one of the things that hasn't come up yet is the kind of concern that a lot of people have that young people in particular are not aware of the true audience of their profiles. And so when Facebook was first becoming popularized, you saw a whole rash of popular press articles that really focused on this, the fact that students were, including pictures of themselves drinking beer, and that their future job, that their future employers might view this and kind of disregard them for that opportunity. You don't see quite as much anymore. But so my take is that I think it's important to kind of have young people learn, how to present themselves. What do you say about yourself? Who's your audience? On top of kind of the technical skills needed to really exploit these new tools. So I think that's one point, and it sounds like you're doing a lot on that front. The other thing that our research has found is that students are often using Facebook to actually support their learning. So, for instance, when we ask them, is Facebook a part of an assignment? The number is very, very low, I think less than 10%. But when we ask, have you used Facebook to arrange for a study group, it's upwards of 3 out of 4 students have used Facebook to connect with other people, and especially at a university like Michigan State, where, some classes can be 100 or 200 people, being able to find, see a list of who is in your who's in your class and get in touch with them for notes that you missed or to get together to study for the test, I think it really can help make kind of classrooms feel more like communities.
Laura, let me ask you this. Do you interact with your students, Laura, through Facebook? In other words, does your personal Facebook life in any way blend with your academic world, or do you have two separate ones, one for work, one for home? Or explain that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I do have one that is strictly for my university, and then I have the other one that Mike's a part of. He gets to see pictures of my daughters and, that type of thing, my family vacations of, tooling around Canada. And then, obviously, I want to keep the student separate from the personal side. So I do actually have a lot of different types of students that will request. They'll stumble upon my personal one, which I don't usually make searchable, but I do. For instance, my profile picture on my student Facebook is my business card. And I do put things, because we in my degree program we actually will play World of Warcraft, so I'll put screenshots of my World of Warcraft character and that type of thing. So yes, I do keep those separate as much as possible, just because I don't necessarily want the two worlds to collide. Although I will have to say that just because of the way that I am, I wouldn't mind if my students ever saw the pictures, or my employer, actually my boss is, she is a friend on both of those Facebooks. So that's not the issue per se, but I just don't want for students to get too familiar, because that definitely does happen, particularly because we're talking about adults. And the other thing that I was going to mention, to what Dr. Ellison was saying, was that, the degree program that I teach in is mostly K-12 educators. And what happens is we really have that big divide between the digital immigrant and the digital native. And a lot of our students, feel that, okay, I'm over 40, I don't know how to get on a social networking program. And then by them dipping into it, we were talking about that divide between personal profile and work profile. And Dr. Ellison had said about, people getting fired, from having their drinking beer and that type of thing. Our instructors, yes, K-12 teachers, I don't think that we understand that quite as much, and are able to convey that to the children who are coming up and putting that digital fingerprint on the web and realizing that it's never really gone. You can take a picture down, but it never goes away. So this kind of really hits home with them, because we're forcing these digital immigrants to take a social networking profile. And so they become more aware as educators, being able to pass that down. And again, like you said, we can teach the people who are the children who are getting, of age and being able to put on these, putting their pictures and their profiles up on the social networking sites, that, it truly can be a hindering block, especially if you'd like to get hired one of these days.
Well, Laura, it's really nice talking to you. Thanks for your input.
Thanks, Mike. It was great to hear your voice.
All right.
And take care. Thank you for doing this show. It's great.
No problem. Talk to you later. We need to take a quick break, Nicole, but we'll be right back in just a second. When you, if you'd like to join our conversation, call 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. You are listening to Gulf Coast Live on Southwest Florida Public Radio. Welcome back. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. We're discussing social networking on today's show, sites like Facebook in particular, especially the growing number of, quote, grown-ups who've been sucked in recently. I'm joined by Michigan State University Professor Nicole Ellison to join our conversation. Give us a call, 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Nicole, I want to go back to this idea of your potential employer or your current employer or whomever stumbling across information that you've posted on Facebook. Am I misunderstanding this, but you have control over who gets to see what's in your information, correct? It's not necessarily publicly available unless you choose to make it so.
Correct. Although there have been cases that I've heard anecdotally where, for instance, a company will be looking at resumes from a number of university students, and they have an intern from that particular university and ask him or her to log in, and so, you know, look at people's profiles through through that. So yes, while there are privacy controls, there are kind of always there's always the chance that you know, someone could take a screenshot and forward it to other people. I mean, obviously, once something is digital, it becomes it's able to be transferred much more easily. It's able to be archived. So I think that, you know, what your last caller is doing in terms of increasing the awareness in terms of how to use these sites, who is your true audience, how to take advantage of these sites is really the way to go. But yes, in terms of privacy controls, there's a very, very wide range of options at your disposal.
Yeah, I have to admit, I wound up on Facebook probably like a lot of people do. I found through a Google search an event that I was interested in Fort Myers here. The only way I could find information on the event was to join Facebook, which was free. It took about 10 seconds. And next thing you know, I'm reading the information about the event, but within about an hour, I have all these friend requests from people that I haven't talked to forever. And next thing you know, I'm, you know, entirely brought into the Facebook fold. But it was this idea that if I didn't say yes, I'll be your friend, and, you know, you wouldn't be able to see what it was I was posting. Not that I was afraid of what I was posting was going to, you know, harm my career or anything like that. But that was a very attractive feature for me that, you know, I, even though I'm pretty into technology and things, I hadn't been aware of that. To me, you know, the caricature of Facebook or MySpace is everyone can see everything and everyone's putting everything inappropriate up all the time. And that's obviously not the case.
No, it's not. And we're actually, in studies that we've done over a period of years now with our students, we've seen a definite increase in terms of students taking advantage of privacy settings. So I think initially there may have been cases where people were kind of less aware of the audience and of the way that privacy settings worked. With Facebook in particular, there was a big kind of uproar when the news feed was first introduced, because even though it was just culling information that you could find yourself by going from profile to profile, the fact that it was aggregating it and highlighting any changes, people were kind of disconcerted by that at first. Now I think you could say that it's readily perceived as one of the more valuable features, but when it was first introduced, there was definitely kind of a disconnect because people weren't used to having their information kind of being changes that they've made to their profile being so visible to others. So I think with all of these tools, as we become more familiar with them, that there's a learning process and that we're all learning how to how to manage our, you know, our privacy settings. And also, I think the caller pointed out this notion that, you know, you may have a professional life, you may have a personal life, and you may want to have different online contexts that support each of those areas. And I think that's actually one thing that Facebook could do better, is to allow us to kind of create a, you know, a, where I could create kind of a grouping of friends, and I could send status updates, for instance, just to them. So for other people who I know who study the internet, I could say I'm reading a particular article, and it could go just to them, and it would be of interest to them. It's not going to be of interest to my, you know, to my long lost high school friend who's a construction worker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I think, one where these kind of niche social networks may kind of step in to fill those other kind of communication needs.
Let's take one more quick call from Jim and Estera. Jim, real quick, we've only got a couple minutes, but welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. My original idea here when listening, I think this is a great show. I've enjoyed it very much. Is I think we're all kind of struggling to make a judgment as to whether Facebook or MySpace is good or bad, and it is what it is. It's technology that's new, and we're all kind of just starting it. And but overall, I've personally found it very helpful in finding old friends and them finding me. And I think it's great. And the comment by the guest that, you know, it's kind of like a background level of communication that can come to the forefront if someone, you know, is in town or whatever is very appropriate.
How old are you, Jim? If you mind.
39.
39. All right. And how long have you been on Facebook?
Facebook probably about a year and a half maybe, and MySpace probably maybe 2.5-3 years.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks very much for the input. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
You too. Bye-bye.
Nicole, do you know if there was any, or has there been any backlash, I guess you might say, from the original adopters? I mean, Facebook started off at Harvard, then it was just for college students, and then they added high school students. And, you know, it wasn't until further down the road that it was people like, you know, you and me and Jim. Has there been any internal grumbling among the original users that maybe this isn't what it was intended for?
I don't know about the intent argument, but I definitely know that when the networks were opened up to high school students and then to professionals, that there were kind of grumblings among the college population. You know, oh, my mom's going to be online, or now my little sister is online, and that it made it feel like less of a kind of elite, closed in environment. I think now, you know, and I'm just speculating, but I think because of the benefits that we've talked about in terms of maintaining weak ties, that I would think that especially as these college students kind of grow, leave college and join their alumni networks, that they'll be able to see kind of the benefits of having a very inclusive, you know, wider population to draw from in terms of their Facebook friends.
You know, one of the other things I read when researching for the show that caught my eye or my thoughts and in some way was it was sort of back to that ambient awareness concept from before. It's this idea that, you know, the people who are your friends that are in your circle, they may not live near you, you may not see them often, but it almost creates a little hometown feel. It's, you know, like your neighbor down the street. You basically know what they're up to. You basically know what's going on in their life, but you don't see them all the time. But you can just walk down the street if you need something. And it seems like it kind of creates that same dynamic in a digital way.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a nice analogy. And I think the notion that it's there if you want it, if you have a few minutes, and that it really does kind of give you a little sense of connection with other people. And, you know, there are those, I'm sure, who would argue that sense of connectivity is, you know, is an illusion. I wouldn't particularly argue that. I think that, that it serves to, serves to kind of smooth future interactions, and that in this busy world that maybe just a few moments of being able to see a picture of someone's new baby or to say congratulations to someone who just posted their elopement pictures. I mean, these are all things that I've done in just the last couple of days. And so I really, for me personally, and I think for many adults out there, Facebook and other social network sites really does serve a need.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Nicole Ellison, is an assistant professor in the Department of Telecommunication, Information Studies, and Media at Michigan State University. Thank you so much for your time today, Nicole.
Oh, it was my pleasure.
If you wanted to call in but couldn't, you can send us an email or a text message to live@wgcu.org. Coming up next, BBC's World Have Your Say. This is Southwest Florida Public Radio, WGCU, Fort Myers, Naples, Sarasota, 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco, 91.7 FM. I'm Mike Canary. Have a wonderful afternoon.